U.S. law protects speech. Advocating for illegal actions that aren't likely to cause immediate harm is protected under certain circumstances. This legal principle is rooted in a significant Supreme Court case from 1919, Abrams v. United States. Back then, Jacob Abrams and a group of anarchists published leaflets in 1918 for a general strike to protest the U.S. sending troops to Russia. They believed this move aimed to suppress the Bolshevik Revolution. Although they kept their identities hidden, they were eventually caught and charged with distributing materials critical of the government and encouraging resistance to the war. Initially, they were convicted, with Molly Steimer receiving a 15-year sentence and Abrams and the other men facing 20 years. However, they appealed their case to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court ruled for the United States, backing the convictions. But Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. had a different take. He wrote a famous disagreement that shaped free speech. Holmes said the government should only limit free speech if there's an immediate danger or an intent to cause harm. This idea led to the belief that sharing ideas freely is the best way to find truth. This metaphor of a marketplace of ideas, though not perfect, influenced later Supreme Court cases. These cases gave stronger protection to speech. American citizens can stay silent. In 1943, a pivotal case, West Virginia State Board of Education v. Barnett, set a precedent: the government cannot force you to speak. This landmark ruling stemmed from a situation involving two children, Marie and Gathy Barnett, who were Jehovah's Witnesses. They refused to salute the American flag in school, citing their religious beliefs. Because of a new law in West Virginia mandating flag salutes, the girls were expelled. A lawyer took their case to federal court and won, but West Virginia appealed, leading to a Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court sided with the Barnetts. Justice Robert Jackson emphasized that just as people have the right to speak, they also have the right to choose not to speak. West Virginia made the Barnetts say the pledge, which went against their freedom to stay silent. This ruling now means that West Virginia can't make people do mandatory flag salutes anymore. Media can critique truthfully. In 1964, a landmark case called New York Times Company v. Sullivan established an important protection for people who criticize public figures, even if they make an honest mistake. This legal safeguard traces back to an incident in 1960 when the New York Times printed a big advertisement supporting civil rights activism without specifically naming any government officials. However, a city commissioner from Montgomery, Alabama, named L.B. Sullivan, felt the ad indirectly accused him of wrongdoing and sued the newspaper for libel. Sullivan and other public figures who brought similar cases initially found success in court, but the New York Times appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court fully backed the New York Times. Justice William Brennan, in his main argument, emphasized the importance of free speech and press. He stated that public debate should be open and lively, even if it means there will be mistakes sometimes. Brennan stressed that citizens must have the freedom to criticize public figures. For a libel case to hold, it must prove actual malice, meaning that false statements were either known to be untrue or made with reckless disregard for the truth. Students can peacefully protest at school. Students have the right to peacefully protest, as shown in the 1969 case Tinker v. Des Moines Independent Community School District. Back in 1965, Mary Beth Tinker, a 13-year-old student, wore a black armband to school to express her opposition to the Vietnam War. However, she got suspended because the school had a rule against wearing armbands. Even though wearing the armband was a way to speak out, protected by the First Amendment, the district court in Iowa thought the rule was fair to keep the classroom in order. But Tinker didn't give up and took her case to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sided with Tinker, stating that schools can't limit students' free speech without proving it'll cause significant disruptions. Justice Abe Fortas, writing for the majority, argued that authorities must show more than just a fear of disturbance. They need to demonstrate that the speech or expression will likely cause substantial disruption. Minor disturbances are part of a free society's reality. Media can publish sensitive material. The 1971 Supreme Court case New York Times Company v. United States gave media companies the freedom to publish sensitive material without government interference. This case was sparked when the New York Times published articles based on the Pentagon Papers, a secret document revealing America's involvement in Vietnam from the 1940s to the 1960s. The government tried to stop further publication by filing a temporary restraining order, claiming it would harm national security. The case reached the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court backed the New York Times with a 6-3 vote. Justice Potter Stewart argued that the government's attempt to stop speech before it happens, known as prior restraint, was not justified. The government couldn't prove that publishing the material would cause immediate and severe harm to the country or its people. This became the legal standard for cases involving sensitive media material. Free speech can include offense. In 1968, Paul Robert Cohen got in trouble for wearing a jacket with the words "fuck the draft" written on it when he went to a courthouse in Los Angeles. He was heading there to testify in a trial. The police arrested him and said he disturbed the peace, giving him a 30-day jail sentence. The courts in California agreed with this decision, so Cohen took his case to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided 5-4 in Cohen's favor, saying he didn't break the law. Justice John Harlan, who led the decision, believed California had stopped Cohen from speaking freely. Harlan said bad words have power and shouldn't be banned. He warned that if we ban words, we might end up stopping people from sharing different ideas. Broadcast networks have speech limitations. In 1973, a radio station of the Pacifica Network aired George Carlin's Filthy Words routine, in the show about the power of language. Carlin's routine was a comedic take on his 7 words you can never say on television bit, poking fun at American attitudes towards certain taboo words. The Federal Communications Commission, FCC, received a complaint from a listener. This prompted the FCC to deem Carlin's language indecent, especially when aired during times when children might be listening. As a result of the FCC v. Pacifica Foundation ruling in 1978, broadcast radio and television are prohibited from using profanities. The FCC has the authority to regulate broadcast content, issue warnings, take fines, and even revoke broadcasting licenses. Pacifica challenged the FCC in court and initially won. But when the FCC took the case to the Supreme Court, they emerged victorious. Justice John Paul Stevens, in his ruling, explained why the FCC could regulate indecent speech on the airwaves. Firstly, broadcasting is unique because it reaches everywhere, making it hard to avoid its influence, and warnings don't fully shield listeners. Secondly, safeguarding children may require limits on what's broadcasted. The First Amendment defends mocking public figures, despite causing distress. In 1988, a big case hit the courts that changed how we see parody and free speech. In 1983, Hustler magazine made a fake ad about Jerry Falwell, a well-known preacher. The ad joked about him doing some terrible things. Falwell got upset and sued for saying it hurt his feelings. The jury didn't believe the lie part but still said Hustler should pay Falwell $200,000 for making him feel bad. Both sides didn't like the decision and took it to the big bosses, the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, led by Chief Justice William Rehnquist, unanimously ruled in favor of Hustler. Rehnquist emphasized that public figures cannot claim damages for emotional harm from parody. He argued that even though some parodies may be unpleasant, they are crucial for social and political discussions and deserve protection. However, if a parody contains false statements that meet the actual malice standard, public figures can take legal action for damages. Public hate speech is protected. In 2010, the Supreme Court ruled in Snyder v. Phelps that hate speech, even when it's hurtful and offensive, is protected under the First Amendment, especially when it involves public issues. This case stemmed from a 2006 incident where the Westboro Baptist Church protested at the funeral of Matthew Snyder, a soldier who died in Iraq. Led by Fred Phelps, they picketed around 1,000 feet from the funeral site, displaying signs with messages like "Thank God for Dead Soldiers" and anti-gay and anti-Catholic sentiments. Initially, Matthew's father, Albert Snyder, won a lawsuit against Phelps and the church. Phelps appealed the decision, leading the case to the Supreme Court. Chief Justice John Roberts ruled in favor of Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church. He stated that although their signs were offensive, they expressed opinions on important public issues like moral standards, clergy scandals, and homosexuality in the military. Additionally, they displayed these views in public areas without physically disrupting Matthew Snyder's private funeral. While some signs targeted Snyder and caused his father emotional distress, Roberts argued that overall, the church's speech addressed significant public concerns and deserved protection. Social media, public forum. In 2017, the Supreme Court decided something important in a case called Packingham v. North Carolina. A guy named Lester Gerard Packingham got in trouble for posting on Facebook about beating a traffic ticket. But here's the thing, he was a sex offender. In North Carolina, there's a rule that says sex offenders can't be on social media if there are kids there. Packingham broke that rule, got caught, and was found guilty. But he fought back and the case went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court unanimously supported Packingham, stating that social media is a vital public space today. Justice Anthony Kennedy emphasized that platforms like social media are where people discuss and share ideas, and even top officials like governors, senators, and the president use them. While the court acknowledged North Carolina's aim to protect children from harm online, it found the state law too broad in blocking all social media access. Instead, the court suggested a more specific and targeted approach to address the issue without infringing on First Amendment rights. Key points. 1. Learn to appreciate diverse viewpoints, as free speech encourages open dialogue. 2. Respect others' choices, including their right to remain silent. 3. Verify sources to navigate through misinformation in the digital era. 4. Advocate for change peacefully, as demonstrated in landmark court rulings. 5. Prioritize transparency and public discourse to hold institutions accountable. 6. Use humor responsibly, understanding its potential impact on social discourse. 7. Practice tolerance towards differing viewpoints while upholding the principles of free speech.